This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is Dennis Quaid. Early in his career, he starred in such films as Breaking Away, The Right Stuff, The Big Easy, and Great Balls of Fire. After a lull in his career, he's made a comeback in the past few years with his roles in The Rookie, Far From Heaven, Frequency, The Day After Tomorrow, and In Good Company. Now he's starring opposite Rene Russo in the remake of the family comedy Yours, Mine, and Ours. They play high school sweethearts who were reunited 30 years later as single parents. They marry on an impulse and form a new home with the 18 children that they have between them, only to figure out their parenting styles are completely incompatible. She's a designer who loves chaos and freedom. He's a Coast Guard admiral who runs a tight ship at home. He draws a big flow chart outlining each family member's responsibilities for the week, but in this scene, he finds the youngest children scribbling all over it.
Stop!
Isn't it pretty?
That was very naughty.
Oh, what's happening? Ooh, boys. I don't think that was a good idea, do you?
No.
But that was very important to your father, so you need to say you're sorry.
Sorry.
Okay, now, go on and play.
Whoa! That's it? Go play?
Well, they're 4 years old, Frank. What else is there to...
There are other...
A spanking?
No, honey, of course not. We don't spank our children.
The animal does.
Occasionally, a little pat on the butt sends a clear message.
Well, you're not spanking my children.
I thought they were our children.
You're not spanking our children.
Okay, fine. Let's just let them all run naked and wild.
Dennis Quaid, welcome to Fresh Air. What's it like to act with 18 kids? Some of them are pretty grown up, but a bunch of them are not.
Well, it was kind of like being the director of a rehab. At times, it could get pretty crazy, just the din of children, you know, with their voices and everybody trying to talk over each other. And then there was the sugar at the craft service table that they would invade, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it was something. But they were all great. They were professionals, and at the end, we were a big family, actually.
Did you have to be kind of parental on the set?
Yeah, I play an admiral in the movie, in the Coast Guard. And so I was the one wearing the uniform, so I took on the sort of, you know, stern dad thing on the set as far as getting everybody to focus. And that way, the director could be a good cop to my bad cop.
Since you were already the bad cop.
Yeah.
Did you like family films as a kid? Did you go see them?
Oh yeah, sure. You know, like Fred McMurray's Follow Me Boys, and you know, so many of them from back then. You know, kind of like Dumbo, and I just I loved them.
We were surprised to learn that Fred McMurray was also in like Hard Boiled films.
Oh yeah, and like Double Indemnity.
Exactly.
Incredible. Yeah, when I grew up, I got a new appreciation of him.
And I bet that's how some kids are going to react when they see, when they grow up after seeing Yours, Mine, and Ours, and they see, say, Far From Heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not Dream Dad. Oh, my God.
And speaking of Far From Heaven, you were so wonderful in that film. This is an homage to 1950s melodramas, particularly melodramas directed by Douglas Sirk. And in those movies, like, every character has this dark secret. And in this film, your secret is a secret that wouldn't have actually been addressed in 50s films because it was too taboo then. Your character is gay, but he's trying to suppress it because your character's married to Julianne Moore and you have 2 children.
I think it was maybe alluded to in a couple of films from back then, but nothing spoken. And I think that Todd Haynes, the director of Far From Heaven, sort of brought that atmosphere to this production as well. Only, you know, it was spoken of.
I want to play just a short scene from this movie. There's some point where you can't go on with the charade anymore. You've realized that you are definitely gay. You can't continue in the marriage, but you're very broken up about it. This is toward the end of the film. You're seated on the couch in your living room, and you've just broken down in tears. And this is a scene with you and Julianne Moore, who plays your wife.
Frank, what is it?
happened.
What?
I've fallen in love with someone who wants to be with me. Kathy. I never knew what that felt. But I know that sounds so cruel, but... Oh, God, Kelly, I tried. I tried so hard to make it go away. And I thought that I could do it for you and for the kids. But I can't. I can't.
That's Dennis Quaid and Julianne Moore in a scene from Far From Heaven. You know, one of the things I love about this movie is that it kind of gets so to the heart of, like, melodrama, particularly with like, the music behind you as you're speaking. Did you do anything to immerse yourself in the mood and in the style of 50s melodramas to prepare for the performance?
Well, yeah, I got a big pile of Douglas Sirk movies that I would watch in my trailer while we were in production of it, and that helped out a lot. And then personally, you know, although I'm not gay myself, I mean, I could understand this guy's pain. It's, you know, he was leading a double life, and, you know, we all go through life where sometimes we have secrets that we feel that we can't reveal to anybody because we feel humiliated or we're in such pain about it. And that's what I related to in playing this guy.
Some actors get kind of washed up in middle age. Like, they start as the leading man or leading lady, and as they get older and their looks fade a little bit, there's no place for them. And I think, in a way, like, you've just gotten more interesting as you've gotten older, both visually and in terms of the performances that you're giving.
Well, I don't know. I feel really lucky. A lot of things that are happening in my career now are really the things that are supposed to happen to actors in their 30s. And I feel really grateful to still be here. I'm quite aware of that. A lot of people I started out with, I don't know where they are anymore. But I think it's important, too, to, if you're going to have longevity in whatever you do, you have to be able to remake yourself instead of just playing the same thing over and over again, because eventually that's, you know, we do get older and it's really, people aren't going to buy it anymore.
You've said in other interviews that when you became very successful, I guess, in your 20s, early in your career, that you didn't appreciate it, or at least you didn't fully appreciate it. What was it like for you to become well-known then, and, you know, particularly in, like, the leading man role of the detective in The Big Easy, you know, the hunk of the moment?
Right.
What are some of the great things and some of the problems that come along with that?
Well, the good things about that was that the roles were coming my way, and you know, with movies like the Big Easy and Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire, and things like that. But I started out really. I always thought of myself as a character actor who could do leading parts, I guess. And I was sort of in denial, and I don't think I was really ready for the fame part that came along with it. I don't think I knew how to handle that very well. I tried to be in denial of it, and I think I was kind of a jerk about it, to tell you the truth. But I didn't really know how to handle it, and sort of asked for that to be taken away from me, and it was for a while.
When you say you were almost asking for your success to be taken away from you, is that a reference to the period when you were having problems with drugs and alcohol?
Yeah, I think so. I think I was addicted to cocaine, and I think that was my way of sort of handling success in a way, or sort of going into myself to kind of get away from myself.
I had read, and you could tell me if this is correct or not, that your father had problems with alcohol. So I was wondering if that's true, and if you'd seen your father have problems with alcohol, what it was like for you when you started having, you know, like, drug or drinking problems yourself, having seen what it does to a person, what it does to the people who love that person.
I think my dad did, but it wasn't anything severe, and I think it's something that he dealt with, in life too later on. But it's definitely something similar. I saw in myself in relation to cocaine when that came up, because it's all about when somebody's addicted to something. It's usually their drug of choice, and cocaine was my drug of choice. It was the thing that I really wanted and really liked, because I like to go up.
One of the good things about being an actor, I would think, is that even bad things that happen to you, you can use in the long run. You can somehow learn from that and use that in a performance. So I'm wondering, growing up, having a father who drank, and then having, a period in which you were addicted to cocaine, what did you learn about how to play somebody in a real way who actually has addiction problems?
To stay away from the overt stuff. It's really, for one thing, somebody's addicted to something, they'll do everything they can to hide it from you, to hide that fact from you. And, the drunk is usually trying to prove that, he can still function. And that's what, the cocaine addict is trying to pretend that he's cool. And because you're always worried everybody's going to find out.
Can you think of a specific film where you've done that?
No. Except in Far From Heaven, mm-hmm. I brought those same feelings that I had about, cocaine and hiding that, secret that I thought I had from the, from the world, and I think I brought that to that character, who himself had a secret.
How close were you as brothers when you were growing up?
Growing up, we were really super close. We shared the same room, in fact, for the first 12 years of my life, our father was a frustrated actor, and I think turned us on into movies and to acting, and Randy went into drama, and I followed. He went into baseball, and I followed along in Little League. He went into drama, I followed along with that. He went to University of Houston and with Mr. Cecil Pickett, who was an acting coach there, and I followed along with that. He went to Hollywood, and I followed along with that too. So I owe my brother a lot. I don't even know if I would be an actor if I weren't for my brother.
Are you still close?
Yes, and there's no one closer. Well, I wouldn't say no one, because I have my son and my wife as well, but he knows me like no one else. I know that.
You say your father was a frustrated actor. How frustrated was he? I mean, how close did he get to actually acting?
Well, my dad was an electrician. There was a family story that he, during World War II, he was in San Francisco, and a couple of talent scouts wanted him to do a screen test, and he couldn't because he was shipping out. So that was the family legend. That, and then my cousin is Gene Autry. So.
No kidding.
Yeah. I get free Angels tickets all the time. That's a good thing.
You're much older cousin, huh?
Yeah. Well, he makes him my third cousin in a way, but he was always talked about. And on my father's side, come from a lot of people who were in vaudeville and carnival people and things like that. So
yeah.
it was always show business.
Because you had family in vaudeville, did people tell jokes in your family a lot?
Yeah, my dad was just, he was always doing his act, several times, always trying out the same bits. And he was hysterical, and he was a crooner as well, He could sing like Dean Martin and Bing Crosby, and yeah, he was pretty funny. In fact, Randy and I, speaking of comedy acts, it's another thing I followed my brother into, doing comedy acts on stage.
Well, I know he used to be in Saturday Night Live. Did you ever do stand-up?
Yeah, we both did stand-up back in Houston when we were growing up. I did it at my uncle's nightclub at the Tidelands Hotel in Houston at that time. I would do a stand-up 5 or 6 nights.
What was the act like?
A week here in the summer. Oh, I would do pretty bad impressions of people at the time, celebrities at the time, and politicians. And,
like who?
Oh, I would do Richard Nixon and W.C. Fields and people like that. Bad Lyndon Baines Johnson, of course. And I would do takeoffs on ads in comic books, like the see-through glasses and the, you know, karate kicks and the Atlas and all that. And I don't know if people were actually laughing or if they just thought it was funny that this 16-year-old kid was up there at the nightclub.
So you followed your brother in terms of going into acting, into comedy, moving to L.A. What was the first movie set you were ever on?
Very first movie set I was ever on, and I was very lucky, is when I got to L.A., my brother was doing the Missouri Breaks, and I drove his car from Los Angeles up to Montana. And I, you know, just walked into, you know, being on the set with Jack Nicholson and Marlon Brando and getting to watch them work. And that was a great education for me, actually. It's the first time I'd actually seen film acting, you know, up close. And it was, I spent like 3 months up there, and I had a ball.
What did you find most interesting about watching Brando and Nicholson act in front of the camera?
Well, Brando especially, he never did the same thing twice. And he seemed to really not care so much about what he did, but it sure was interesting to watch everything that he did, that's for sure. And I got the opportunity, because he had to play mandolin in a scene, so I learned a couple of chords on the mandolin, and I got named the mandolin teacher for Brando, so... That was a lot of fun, and then watching Jack, who was just great with everybody, and I got a lot of advice from him. He was very generous with himself.
What kind of advice did he give you?
Well, he just told me his story about how he came to Hollywood and how it, at the time I was just starting out, you know, it seemed like an impossible task, and it told me how it had seemed that way to him too, and you know, it just takes time for things to happen, and you stick in there. And certainly, his career, is an example of that. He spent years, doing B movies with Roger Corman, and really struggling to get a job. Even his own agent told him, I think, to quit the business at one point because he couldn't act. And look what happened.
Right. You recently got a star in the Walk of Fame. What did that mean to you? Like, when you're a kid, that seems like it's such a big deal. When you're an adult and you get it, does it still seem like a very big deal?
Well, it's really hard to kind of... I'm not all that good at getting honored. It's really nice. If anything, it's nice in the way that I've been a part of the Hollywood community for 30 years, it is a town. I know in some ways it is my hometown, and so it's nice to be like a part of the community. On the other hand, you know, the second day I got to Hollywood, I remember walking down the streets of Hollywood Boulevard and seeing all the stars, and asking myself, well, who's that? Also, my star is between Meryl Streep and Woody Woodpecker. So, so as far as highbrow, that'll tell you something, won't it?
Well, Dennis Quaid, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Terry. It's been a pleasure.
Dennis Quaid is starring in the new film, Yours, Mine, and Ours.